It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom, and over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, the satraps might give account to them, so that the king would suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault, because he was so faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." So these governors and satraps thronged before the kings and said thus to him, "King Darius, live forever." All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps, the counselors and advisors, have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish a decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed. According to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter, therefore King Darius signed the written decree. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room, with the windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. And they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree, that have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, "The thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter." So they answered and said before the king, "That Daniel, who was one of the captives from Judah, does not show due regard for you, O king, or for a decree that you have signed, but makes his petition 3 times a day." And the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him.
I'll be reading Daniel 6:15-28. Then these men approached the king and said to the king, "Now, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and Persians, that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed." So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you." Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signets of his lords, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. Now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no musicians were brought before him, and his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Then Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God has sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you." Now the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatsoever was found on him because he believed in his God. And the king gave the command, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives, and the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. Then King Darius wrote to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, "Peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall stand, not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian."
The rest of the young people, I'll be reading from Daniel 5. And especially pay attention, I think, a key verse in this chapter, verse 23. We're actually going back. The young men read from 6, Daniel lines in. This is Daniel 5. Belshazzar, the king, made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in the presence of 1,000. While he tasted the wine, Belshazzar gave the command to bring the gold and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple which had been in Jerusalem, that the king and his lords, his wives and his concubines might drink from them. Then they brought the gold vessels that had been taken from the temple of the house of God which had been in Jerusalem, and the king and his lords, his wives and his concubines drank from them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze and iron, wood and stone. In the same hour, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and wrote opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance changed and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his hips were loosened and his knees knocked against each other. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. The king spoke, saying to the wise men of Babylon, "Whoever reads this writing and tells me its interpretation shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around his neck, and he shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Now all the king's wise men came, but they could not read the writing or make known to the king its interpretation. Then King Belshazzar was greatly troubled. His countenance was changed, and his lords were astonished. The queen, because of the words of the king and his lords, came to the banquet hall. The queen spoke up, saying, "O king, live forever. Do not let your thoughts trouble you, nor let your countenance change. There is a man in your kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy God, and in the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, made him chief of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. Inasmuch as an excellent spirit, knowledge, understanding, interpreting dreams, solving riddles, and explaining enigmas were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar, now let Daniel be called, and he will give the interpretation." Then Daniel was brought in before the king. The king spoke and said to Daniel, "Are you the Daniel who is one of the captives from Judah, whom my father the king brought from Judah? I have heard of you that the Spirit of God is in you, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom are found in you. Now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing and make known to me its interpretation, but they could not give the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of you that you can give interpretations and explain enigmas. Now, if you can read the writing and make known to me its interpretation, you shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around your neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Then Daniel answered and said before the king, "Let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. O king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar, your father, a kingdom and majesty, glory, and honor. And because of the majesty that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whomever he wished, he executed. Whomever he wished, he kept alive. Whomever he wished, he stood up. Whomever he wished, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his spirit was hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. Then he was driven from the sons of men. His heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild donkeys. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God rules in the kingdom of men and appoints over it whomever he chooses. But you, his son Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, although you knew all of this. And you have lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your lords, your wives, and your concubines have drunk wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone, which you do not see or hear or know. And the God who holds your breath in his hand and owns all of your ways, you have not glorified. Then the fingers of the hand were sent from him, and this writing was written. And this is the inscription that was written, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. This is the interpretation of each word. Mene, God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. Tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Perez, your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Then Belshazzar gave the command, and they clothed Daniel with purple and put a chain of gold around his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, was slain, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom about 62 years old. Now, being third in the kingdom, the third king wasn't mean that he was a third king, like that he was third in power in the kingdom as a reward for what he had done. And it is then Darius the Mede who is king when Daniel is thrown into the lion's den in just a few, in the next chapter. So just a few years later, he is thrown in the lion's den. But I think what's interesting here is the pride of Nebuchadnezzar and of Belshazzar, who should have known different but didn't. Because he was alive and knew his father's fall from glory, if you will, that he had been king. And Nebuchadnezzar, I mean, is a name that we know well, and that Nebuchadnezzar had gone from being the king in charge of everything to running wild with the animals and eating with the animals and sleeping outside. I mean, he was completely out of control until what happened? Until he acknowledged God, who God was, and that God sets up kingdoms and puts men in charge of them. And so the lesson Nebuchadnezzar learned was that it is the God of heaven who put him where he was, who placed him in charge. And so another lesson that we need to learn from that is what about, brought about the captivity of Israel, of Judah, actually, because at this time we have a split kingdom. Israel had already gone into captivity years before to the Assyrians. But what caused Israel to go into captivity by Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians? And this is a vitally important question. Vitally important. Because my guesses would be our theology will be wrong, our understanding will be God, of God will be wrong, and our reaction to a threat will be inappropriate if we don't understand this basic question and understand its answer. And we've talked about it many times before. What brought about Israel's captivity? Why did they lose to the Babylonians? Well, because Babylon was more powerful. That's not the answer. Babylon was more powerful. But the answer to that question is, the reason Israel or Judah went into captivity is because they forsook God, and God brought the Babylonians up against them and brought about their defeat. It was prophesied about, and it was the fulfillment of God's prophecy against Judah. because of their disobedience. It had nothing to do with the supreme power of Babylon. Because if it was just about power, Israel would have never left Egypt. They would have never escaped Egypt because the Egyptians were far more powerful than Israel was. But God delivered them and God brought up the Babylonians. And that was a lesson Nebuchadnezzar learned. Yes, you are powerful. Yes, you have been able to do all these things, but it's because God allowed him to do those things. And so we come now to his son Belshazzar, who should have learned the lesson from his father, but he did not. He did not. And so instead of humbling himself and realizing that his power came from God, he begins to do what? He throws the gate feast for what reason? Show out. I mean, that's the reason for the feast. He's showing out. And so instead of honoring God, he brings the items from the temple, which were holy, and brought them out for them to drink from. And he begins to honor the gods of, let's bring 23 back up. Let's read that. That's an interesting verse. You have lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your lords, your wives, your concubines have drunk wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone. You have praised the gods of the things you have accumulated, the things that you have built, the things that you can see. And that is a common problem for all of us, right? It might be in the form of an idol. It was in the time of Israel, just being delivered from Egypt. I'm still astonished at 40 days that Moses is gone and they have built a golden calf. Because why? They wanted something they can see. But what do you see in this list that might scare us today? People who are not idolatrous by nature, in that we don't worship graven images. We might be idolatrous, but we wouldn't. You would find us, it would be hard pressed for us to be convinced to worship some kind of graven image. It's just not kind of where we are, right? But is there anything in that list that would scare you? What might scare us is, while we might not worship a graven image, what might we have great trust in? Gold, silver, bronze, iron, things that we've created. If you listen to radio much, there are ads every day for Goldline or someone else for you to get your gold. For what reason? When everything collapses, gold will hold value. Now, economically, that may or may not be true. But if that's where I put my trust, what's the difficulty? I'm really no better off than Belshazzar, right? Because who is going to sustain us in the days of trouble? God is. And it's imperative that we understand that. It is fundamental and foundational to Christian belief for us to understand that God will care for us in days of trouble. That's what the book of Revelation is really about. It's about the victory of God's people in times of trouble. It's that God's people are victorious because it's easy to trust in things we can see, and that's what Belshazzar does. And then, does this remind you of a parable at all in the teachings of Jesus? Is there a parable that jumps up at you? Y'all can answer. And if it doesn't, I'll tell you. You don't even have your glasses on. This is the same teaching that Jesus teaches in the man that we refer to having built bigger barns, right? You remember his attitude? It is the same as Belshazzar's. I built bigger barns because at this point I have enough wealth that I can care for myself, that no matter what externals happen around me, I can care for myself. And then what's required of him? His life, right? But he couldn't control his own life. He might have had plenty of material wealth. However, the power of life and death was not his. And the very same thing is true of Belshazzar. He couldn't control his life. While he had amassed wealth and power, he can't control his life. And he dies in a different way. Instead of dying peacefully in his sleep, what happens? He's assassinated. That very night, he is assassinated. Now, there's one thing about it. He's got enough sense to be scared, right? Got enough sense to be scared. Interesting in the translation that his hips were loosened and his knees knocked together. What reminds me of is Shaggy on Scooby-Doo. And that what that, you know, Shaggy was on. But this man is so scared that it is affecting him physically because what he had depended on the wrong things. He had not humbled himself before God. And he had a visual lesson in his own life with his father that he should have acknowledged God and his power. He should have feared God, which was the beginning of wisdom. We talked about that this morning, but he did not. And so he lost his life and his kingdom. His wealth did him no good because he did not honor God. And it's really kind of an interesting thing and one we ought to be reminded of because the scripture will tell us, don't worry about the one who can destroy the body, right? But fear the one who can destroy both body and soul in hell. And so the thing is, we should fear God who has the power to save us, to shelter us, and to care for us, and not to trust in our own intelligence or our own innovations or those things that we have amassed, what power or wealth we have, because those will not sustain us because they don't. If we can have all the wealth in the world, I mean all of it, we can rule the world, but we wouldn't have the power over our own life or death. You know, even with all the technology, we couldn't stop. We couldn't change that. And Jesus would say, why would you even worry? It makes it silly to worry because you can't change one hair black or gray. Now you can color it. We can do that, but you really can't make that change. And so why do we worry about those things? On the other hand, we need to learn to trust in God. Why would we trust in material things when it is truly God who provides for us? So to me, that's the lesson of Daniel chapter 5. God has prepared a way for us because it is God and God only who can bring about our salvation. He's done that through the gift of his Son for all of us who would humble ourselves and believe and come to him, be washed in the blood of Jesus, and confess his lordship and live our lives in service to him. If you need to do that, why don't you come while we stand and sing?